It is my great honor tonight to introduce to you a young man by the name of Siali Longi. You will notice a couple of things about his experience that he is going to share with you. He's going to speak from his heart. This changed his life forever, altered his understanding of the importance of life, and to be perfectly honest with you, from the description that I heard from Sandy Cherry, that the real reason that he is here is because despite all that he went through, which most people wouldn't survive, he remained because of his wife, his family. And I thought that was a wonderful tribute to both of them. I'll turn the time over now to our speaker. Please give him a big welcome.
Martin, thank you for your introduction. I'm not exactly sure what qualifies me to stand up here and share my story. If it differs from anything that anyone else here has experienced, I figured I'd start with giving you a little background about me and where I'm from. My name is Siali Longi. Currently, I'm a 25-year-old student at BYU. So if you want to get your booze out of the way, just throw them over here. I grew up in a military family, and both of my parents are Tongan immigrants. So every 2 to 3 years, we would pack up and move to a new place. This shaped who I was. I found myself, you know, didn't matter where I moved, I ended up liking what they did there. From living in Alaska to going ice fishing, one of the things I love to do, to living in California and just hanging out and taking walks on the beach. I found that shaped my life. Growing up, I played a lot of sports, and I was pretty involved in school. I loved to compete. I loved to play basketball. Baseball is basically what I mostly did. And I threw discus and hammer for BYU for a short time. I served a mission in the LDS Church. I served 2 years in New York City, which I loved to do. So growing up, service and competition, those are the things that kept me going. While going to school at BYU, I worked at a place called Provo Canyon School. It's a residential treatment center for teenage boys. I've been there for 3 years, and my experience there has been wonderful. I love working with troubled youth. I love trying to influence them and, you know, help them make right decisions, help them make their own decisions. While I was working is when I went through my experience. On November 5th of last year, I was headed up to the airport. One of the boys in our program had finished our program, and I was taking him home. It was the first weekend of November, and probably one of the few times that I remember it snowing or anything this year, honestly. But it was, the snow started to stick a little bit. It was a little slushy. And so as I drove to the airport with this student, on I-15, I spun out. And as I spun out, I kind of hit the median. We stopped the car, and I didn't feel like anything was wrong, so I turned it around and kept going on I-15. As I continued on going down the road, I heard something banging on the back rear wheel. I didn't know if I had blown out a tire or if something was sticking out, but I didn't want to be in a more dangerous situation. So I pulled over in the emergency lane of I-15. When I pulled over on the emergency lane and I stepped out of my car, I went around and I was inspecting the damage of my car, trying to see what was wrong, see if anything was sticking out. At that moment, there was a 16-year-old driver who lost control of his vehicle. At the speeds of 70 to 75 miles per hour, struck me from behind. He had struck me into my own vehicle. I was crushed into my own vehicle and kind of tossed over the top. I ended up, you know, laying on the ground there. This was around 1300 South and I-15, so near the yeah, near the 21st, on between 21st and 13th South. As I lay there, I didn't lose consciousness. I laid there and I didn't panic. I was looking for my phone. I tried to call my wife, but she wouldn't answer her phone. I guess she was sleeping. I got a hold of my dad. I told my dad, hey, I've been in a car accident. The ambulance is on its way. I guess I'll talk to you later. And so I hung up on him. And so that's all I ended up telling him. I wasn't sure what happened to me fully at the time. I knew that at least one of my legs were broken because I could feel the achiness, but I didn't know anything else was going on. At the time, I had seen a man across the road. He was wearing a white shirt and tie. I yelled over for him, and I was like, hey, come here. And he was like, no, lay down, you're in shock. And I told him, I was like, no, you need to come here. And he says, no, you need to lay down, you're in shock. And I asked him if he was a man of God. And I saw him just having a white shirt and tie, and I just assumed, and I asked him to pray for me. And he said, no, you're in shock. And I told him, no, you need to pray for me right now. And so he did. They took me to the hospital here in Murray, to IMC. I actually have this list here. It's a list of my injuries. As they took me to IMC, they told me, and they sat me down and explained to me, rather they sat down, my family explained to them what had happened to me. I had suffered a severe brain injury with significant bruising and bleeding to my head, which was enough by itself that should have killed me. I also suffered a hangman's break. A hangman's break is back in the old days when people used to be hung properly, so to say, is that when they would be hung, the noose would snap a part of a person's neck. That's how they would be hung. If not done the right way, they would suffocate. But I suffered a hangman's break, which was a fracture to my C1, C2, and C3, with significant ligament damage between C2 and C3, meaning that my C2 and C3, the ligaments that support it during the whiplash were once separated in my accident. I suffered fractures in my lower back, shattered pelvis, which was one of the worst of the injuries. It was an open book fracture where, I don't know how to explain it to you, but it was an open book fracture where my pelvis basically, as I was hit on impact, exploded out, and it was fractured in four places. I tore everything in my right knee. I had open fractures on both legs. And then I had significant soft tissue damage in my right leg. When I was hit into my vehicle, my calf muscle was shredded off by the crush. And so they ended up removing all of my calf muscle in order to save my leg. And then I had a shattered ankle. During the period I was in IMC, I was never quite sure what happened or what was wrong. That's what was wrong with me, what I just listed. In my period at IMC, I was in excruciating pain at times. I was in so much pain that I would continue to fight against whoever was near me. I would struggle, and I was restrained. I was lost. They keep you medicated. I know it was for my good, but I was so confused most of the time. At IMC, there was a point in time where I felt that I had been separated from myself, and that's how I'm here. I spoke to Sandy Cherry about my experience. They kept me induced in a coma for about 5 days. And from what I know and what my experience was, is that, you know, I was put in it felt like a waiting room. I didn't feel at this point in time where I feel like I was separated away from myself. I didn't feel pain. I didn't feel panic. I wasn't worried. I just felt like I was there. I knew that my body wasn't there. I knew that something had happened, but for some reason I couldn't recollect what happened to me. I was in a calm state. My family always shared with me that when my brothers would come in and speak to me as I was induced in this coma, when my brothers would speak to me, that's when I would try to sit up and fight the most. And then they would have to call my wife in to come calm me down. But this whole time while this was happening, I was in a different area. I wasn't there. My experience means a lot to me because I felt that I was at the point where I could decide. At moments, I would hear a voice, not a strong voice, but I would hear a voice that would be repeating, you're okay, you're in the hospital, calm, just calm down. And I couldn't tell you whose voice it is. It's a voice I didn't recognize. When I was sitting here waiting, I would hear, "It's okay, you're in the hospital, calm down." And so I felt that at this specific point that I was either going or coming. But there's one thing that I could not grasp, and that was I hadn't told my wife I was in an accident. She didn't answer the phone. And so as I was in the state, all I could think of was, oh, I need to tell Nicole. I need to tell Nicole I was in an accident. And that's all I could think of. I need to tell her. She needs to know. When I was extubated, woken up from my experience, everything came back. I felt sore. I felt pain. I felt confused. I didn't know where I was at. For the first, I'm not sure how long, I didn't even recognize my wife when she was in the room. But I feel no matter where you are or where you come from or what you believe, it's an experience that we'll all go through. It's an experience that I felt that's very eye-opening. I spent the next 9.5 months, I spent almost a month and a half at IMC, and then after that I was in Health South for 3 months, and then I went to Rocky Mountain and Riverton. And after this whole experience, that had totally changed the way that I thought, especially on my view of death. I felt that I would be hurt by things, you know, if they were taken away from me, that I could be hurt by many things. But death wasn't something that I feared because of my experience. That calm, relaxing, you know, state of mind that I was in. And it's hard to explain. For those of you who experienced it, you know, I'm sure it's something similar. I felt helpless. At the same time, I was assured that everything would be okay. It changed my outlook as I was going through rehab, because I would see other patients suffering. And as I would see them suffering, I felt for them. I didn't feel bad. I knew that they were in pain. I felt bad that they were in pain, but I knew that where they were going wasn't a bad place. When I was 19, I was in the room with my mother and her siblings as her mother passed away. I took it really hard. Her last few months, we got really close, and I had the opportunity to spend more time with her. But it was really hard for me to accept that, to see her after she'd had a stroke, to see her struggle, to see her in the state she was in. That was really hard for me. As I went through my experience, my view has changed. As I see patients going through the same thing my grandmother did, it's something that I accept now. And I hope that the families of those who are going through a tragedy or aging or whatever it may be, it's a state of rest. It's a state of feeling calm. And that's what it was for me. I remember becoming hypersensitive when I was in the hospital. I spent a lot of time going between the trauma floor and the ICU. While I was there, I would hear over the intercom that someone was coding. And I didn't know what it meant, but it always hurt when I heard that. I asked a nurse one day, her name was Kaylee, one of my nurses, and I asked her, "What does that mean when they say that?" And she says, "Oh, someone's heart stopped and they're working on resuscitating them." And as she told me that, I cried. But I didn't know why I was crying. Cultures and religions, race, whatever things that feel like separate us now, there is that something that holds us together. So they would call. They would say someone was coding, and they would say the room. And, you know, there's a big rush. And I would sit there and I would cry, not knowing why. But there is a connection between what we have here and what is on the other side. There's a connection. Wherever you may feel it or however you may feel it, there's something there. When I was in extreme pain, when I think I couldn't bear it any longer, I had an experience where I saw or felt the presence of my grandfather. I wasn't really close with my dad's dad. He died when I was young. But my mom's dad, And when we eventually moved to Utah, he had moved to Utah with his wife. And he was a very spiritual man. And when I was around him, you could feel something different. And it's like that with a lot of people. When I'm with my wife, I just feel something different. And so that's the way it was with my grandfather. There was something different about my grandfather that I could distinctly feel when I was in those moments of pain. I felt like he was there. I felt like he was there comforting me. For a long time, I didn't have feeling from my waist down. A lot of it was numb and it would tingle and I would have sharp pains. But I would have feelings of him sitting there rubbing my feet and just massaging my feet. And my mom was with me at the time and I told her, I was like, your father's here, he's rubbing my feet. I was in so much pain. That's the only thing that would make me feel better is I could feel someone rubbing my feet. You know, I didn't know that I had one of my legs vacuum packed and the other leg wrapped. I didn't know that at the time, but I could physically feel someone rubbing my feet. So that connection is there. I thought at the time that it was survivor's guilt. As I laid in my hospital bed, they left the TV on, and so I would always hear the news, and I would listen on the news. And within the 2 weeks that I was there, I believe there was 3 accidents, the same as mine. Someone was experiencing trouble, they pulled over, and they were in an accident. One was, I believe in North Ogden, I can't remember, I vaguely remember, but it was a trucker. He'd pulled over, I don't know if he slid out, but he pulled over, and as he stepped out of his car, I don't know if he was on a bridge, but he fell down to his death. And then another experience was a truck had pulled over and a husband and wife had pulled out, had gotten out of the car to see what was going on. And the same thing, they were hit and I believe it was the husband that lost his life. As I heard these stories, again, I would start to cry and I'd start to just bawl and I had no idea why. At the time, I thought it was survivor's guilt. And at times, I still feel it. At times, when I hear things that go wrong, I ask myself, you know, why them and not me? But as I started to think about it and try to understand it more, sometimes we seem to see it as a negative thing. Sometimes we see it as it stopping, that we go through life, awesome experience, we learn, get an education, we do awesome in basketball, whatever you excel at, and then death, it's done. From my experience, I've come to understand that that's not the case, that there is something more. But I still feel, you know, why me? With my head injury, why me? I befriended a 19-year-old kid at one of my rehab centers who had gotten in a motorcycle accident. I believe he fractured part of his tailbone. I'm not sure exactly. But the other thing that happened was he had brain injury. I look at him and I ask, you know, why not me? You know, he has to relearn how to walk, relearn how to eat, do all these things. And I still ask myself, why not me? With my hangman's break, as I crutch around wherever I'm going, I look at others who've been disabled for their whole lifetime, or have lost the use of their arms and their legs. And I ask myself, why not me? And I still don't have an answer. My answer so far is not to take it for granted. My answer so far is to take it as far as I can go. By multiple doctors, I was told many things. At first, they didn't expect me to live. As they stuck me in the CAT scan, I began to bleed out through the open wound in my leg. The surgeon who was supposed to stabilize my neck, there were so many other things wrong, is that he couldn't stabilize my neck for, I believe it was 2.5 weeks. My neck wasn't stabilized. They took me into surgery, and they would put me in all different kinds of positions to try to fix what was broken. But they couldn't guarantee that I would come back alive because I was moving so much. So many things just lined up perfectly for me. I asked myself, you know, why me? For me, as Martin forementioned it, for me it was strongly tied to my wife, Nicole. I'd met her at school. at the time of my accident, we hadn't even been married for 2 years. We'd been married 2.5 years now. But when I was going through my trial, when I was going through everything I was going through, all I could think about was, I need to tell her that what happened to me. That I had unfinished business. And that's what it felt like. And that's my personal experience, is that I felt that my thought of her and leaving her, I strongly felt it wasn't my time. I hope that as I continue to think about it and continue to meet others and share my experience, that I'll get a grasp of why it was me. But I also hope that that's not what sticks with me for the rest of my life, that I can move on, that the answer to my question is to not take it for granted and just keep going forward. Right now I'm continuing to go to therapy, like I said, from almost dying. At first they told me that, I was told that I wouldn't make it. And then I was told that I would have limited use of my limbs. And then I was told that I would be in a wheelchair. Then I was told that I could only progress so far. Right now I'm told that I'll probably be with crutches for a very long time. And as my history has shown, I hope that I prove them wrong there as well. But I know that one thing is for certain. Whether it is we go to the other side or we stay here, I feel it's another chapter. I don't think that's anything to be feared. I had problems with anxiety as I left the hospital. When Gold Cross picked me up and they took me to appointments, I would have problems being in the vehicle. They'd strap me down in the stretcher and they made sure my wheels were locked most of the time. But I found myself reaching up with my arm, wrapping my arm around a seatbelt, and just holding on for dear life. I had lots of anxiety. And I continued it. I'm not saying it stopped. I still have times where I get anxious, I get jumpy, irritated. But now as I continue to learn more about the experience and share it with others, it's become easier for me to accept the same thing, is that death isn't anything to be feared. I couldn't tell you exactly what is on the other side. I can't tell you who'll be there to greet you, per se, but I can tell you how I felt when I was in that waiting period. I'll call it a waiting period. When I was there, I felt really calm. I was assured that I was okay. I was assured that I was in the hospital, but I was very calm. My spirit seemed to know what was going on. I can't tell you what's over there, but it's a very calm and very assuring feeling that I had. Sometimes we go through bad experiences, whatever it may be, near-death experience or life-changing experience, catastrophic experience, whatever we may go through. But one thing I've taken from it is to salvage the lessons that are worth keeping with you and to move on, to play the cards that you were dealt. My dream was we were going to move to Austin so my wife could dance ballet. I had a dream of being a law enforcement officer. Sandy's here. I had dreams of being a law enforcement officer, eventually wanting to join the U.S. Marshal Program. But as I continue to go through this, with the knowledge that I have now, all I can say is just to play the hand that you've been dealt. Bad things will happen. We can't stop that. But what we can do is to learn from it. And that's something that I'm trying to do. To learn about, you know, what could have happened to me. To learn about how lucky I am. And to do more for, you know, those who are in my same situation. And as we continue to do that, void, emptiness, hole that we may feel will be filled in. I don't have a chance of being a federal law enforcement agent, but that doesn't dig at me. That doesn't bother me. And I use that as an example to those of you who may have lost someone, yourselves, may have lost something or been through something tragic. The holes that have been dug into your heart, that have been, sometimes may have seemed pulled from your heart, holes that make you, that leave you feel incomplete, they can be filled in again. That as you continue to learn, you will find something to fill the hole. After sharing my experience, I hope that death isn't something that digs at you, or digs in your heart, or leaves a hole in your heart. People come and go, but the expressions that they leave on us are forever. That there is something there. I'm not saying to forget the experience. Don't forget the experience, but remember it. Your tragedies can make you stronger. Find a way to manipulate it, take a hold of it, to push you forward. If it's someone you've lost, remember them. Remember the things that they did. Don't let it make you an incomplete person, but complete yourself as a whole for them. So I'm here now. I actually discharged from my rehab facility the first week of August. Coincidentally, one of the nurses that took care of me is here, but it's something that she'd mentioned before I got up here to speak. There's no such thing as coincidences. We're put where we are, you know, wherever it may be, whoever you may be with, but take advantage of that. An example is I love to play the guitar and sing, and I like to play the ukulele and sing. I don't like to do it in front of people. But when I was at this rehab, he told me to do it. I did it every Friday for the patients. You know, some things that we have to do to make ourselves whole will be uncomfortable. It'll put us outside of our bubble. Some things that we are asked to do, experiences that we'll have to go through, tragedies that come knocking at your door when you're not ready for it, you know, they will happen, and those won't be stopped. Whether it's to you or to a close friend, to a family member, you know, all you can do is live your life the best you can, you know, without any reserve. I feel that through my experience that I can do more of that. Death isn't something that I fear, nor is it something that'll hold me back. Metaphorically, I've gone to hell and back. That my dignity was stripped from me as I was in the hospital for so long. But sometimes we're asked to do things that we don't want to do. And as we, you know, put ourselves in those situations, or as we face those situations, we shouldn't be afraid. We shouldn't be afraid to turn it into a positive experience. We shouldn't be afraid to face, you know, whatever challenge it may be. Again, I'd like to thank Martin and Sandy for getting hold of me to let me share my experience. And I guess at this time, I'll open it up to questions.
On the other side, did you hear any, feel spirits or see any spirits?
I didn't see any spirits, but I felt the presence of spirits. I didn't see anyone, but I felt that something was there, and that I was there and I was comforted. Like I said, I didn't panic. I was there just waiting for something.
When you were in that state, did you see light or darkness, or just had feelings?
I just had feelings. I didn't see anything as to say I was in a room, but it felt more like I was going through time and space. That it was just feeling.
So you were somewhere, but you didn't know where, but you were comforted totally.
Yes.
The man that gave you the prayer or the blessing that asked you.
Oh, sorry.
Have you talked to him since?
Oh, I have no idea who it was. Okay. No, I haven't.
I just wondered what he experienced seeing you there.
Yeah, and I think about that too. that one day maybe I'll run into him and he'll tell me a story about some guy getting hit and it's like, oh, hey, that was me. But no, I do think about that, but I haven't met him.
I have a question about your whole story was about how you came back, how you didn't want to leave because you had to explain to your wife. So did you ever finally explain to her what had happened?
I remember waking up and she was there. Well, I didn't recognize her at first, but as the nurses continued to ask me questions, and I recognized that she was my wife, and I did. I told her. I remember, I think one of the first things I said was, hey, did you know I got hit by a car? I guess that was enough it was so important for me to tell her. By myself, I knew that she would eventually be told, but I felt it was important for me, you know, being so close to her, to tell her.
But the person that you saw at the beginning of the accident, was that person a real person, or was that kind of like your angel that came to say, you know what, it's not your time?
The person in the white shirt and tie? I don't know. If I could recall who it was, I would go find them. I would make an effort to look for them, but I couldn't tell you who it was. Whether it was a person or an angel watching over me, you know, I feel it was, at that time, it was what I needed.
Did you tell them about the blessing you received from your father-in-law?
My father-in-law?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't tell him that.
Okay. Would you mind sharing that?
No, I can share that. My father-in-law and my mother-in-law are serving an LDS mission in Tacoma, Washington. They're kind of a liaison or doing a military relationship at the Lewis McChord base. But the week I got hit, they were supposed to leave. And so I delayed their leaving for a week. But before he left, I asked Bill, my father-in-law, for a blessing before he left. And while he gave me that blessing, I had a vision. I saw something. I saw that I was at a family event with him. And right now, Nicole and I don't have any children. But I was at a family event with him, and he was holding a baby, and it was my baby. And I don't know why I knew that, but I knew it. I knew the child was going to be my child. And I shared that experience with my mom. And when I told my mom that, that's when she knew that I was going to be okay, is when I had that experience in the ICU. I had a feeling, and I saw one of the kids that my wife and I would have. So the tie between me having unfinished business or, you know, needing to tell my wife something, it definitely could be connected to, you know, the future of that child.
Are you still dealing with pain, and how do you deal with that? That would be my first question.
I deal with it by fidgeting. So I still take medication, but the pain isn't unbearable. The pain I feel now, I have a high pain tolerance to begin with, but when I do feel achy and sore, I'll try my best just to keep going, keep moving, move around, or complain to my wife.
I think a lot of people deal with pain. My other question, you mentioned that there are no coincidences.
Uh-huh.
I wonder how you would explain your situation as to what the purpose has been, since it wasn't a coincidence. What has been the purpose from your perspective?
I say there's not such thing as a coincidence. There's one part of my story. They wanted to amputate my leg, and I was told, my family was told multiple times that it would be amputated. I think it was the fourth time that they told me that they were going to amputate it. They told me they were going to take me into surgery. I don't know if you can see the scar on my arm. They ended up taking the artery and vein out of my left arm to replace the artery in my lower leg, a muscle from my inner thigh, and a skin graft from my left leg. They wanted to do that to save my leg. This was their third try doing that. The doctor I had was very persistent. I'm sure many doctors in the ER would have said, leave the leg, save the person. From the get-go, I had doctors who believed that they could save the leg. This final time that they were going to save my leg, my plastic surgeon started to call throughout the valley other plastic surgeons for ideas of how to save my leg. While he was doing this, he received a call from a plastic surgeon who ended up retiring this last May. This other surgeon called him and said that he'd heard about my case and he wanted to sit in with me, the operation. My previous operations lasted 19 to 20 hours for them to try to save my leg. But when these two came together, they finished the operation in about 9 hours. They said everything seemed to go well and textbook. I say there's no coincidences because that man or angel that was on the side of the road, the doctor who, after everyone told him to just take the leg, you know, he still persisted that I could keep it. And then this plastic surgeon who basically came out of nowhere and decided to sit in the surgery with him. And the role it's played in my life, I guess it's just my outlook has changed, as in I accept everything as it comes. If you do the best you can in whatever you're doing, then, you know, someone's life, if it's not yours, will be benefited.
Have you and your wife had the baby whom you saw in the spirit world since then?
We have not. We have not had a baby yet. I just got out of the hospital. Maybe I'll be back to speak in 9 months. We'll see.
Sialy, you're a real hero in my book. I think there's three other heroes here, or heroines: your mom, your wife, and the nurse. They deserve a round.
And then Nikki. So my wife here is Nicole, but she doesn't want to stand up. Can you stand up? And then my nurse at Rocky Mountain was Nikki here in the green shirt.
Do you know what happened to the 16-year-old that spun out?
I don't know what happened to him. I know they kept in touch with my family via my sister-in-law. I haven't spoken to him since. I don't have any hard feelings towards him, and I hope that one day we will be able to meet and speak. I don't hold him accountable for what happened to me. I mean, I'd spun out just before he did. There were times where, you know, I was in therapy or the self-pity was overwhelming, and I did have thoughts of, oh, if only that kid didn't hit me. But realistically, an accident's an accident. I hope he can do what I'm trying to do, is to just play the hands that you've been dealt and just do the best you can.
Well, you have a great attitude, I have to say. Really good attitude.
Thank you.
But I just wanted to know if the boy was all right or not.
Oh, he's physically, I know he's okay. Yeah, where he's at now, I'm not sure.
You had a passenger that you were taking to the airport. Had you delivered that person, or was he in the car?
He was in the car when I was hit, so he was okay. I was the only one hurt in the accident. My boss was notified, and he was able to be taken to the airport safely.
You mentioned that you came back with this hypersensitivity, this feeling of connectedness to others, very sensitive to other people's pain and discomfort. In your opinion, there's no doubt you were a good man before this accident, I'm sure. And yet it took this experience for you to maybe obtain this spiritual gift of this being very, very sensitive. In your opinion, why do you think it took this? And for most of us who haven't had or really don't want that traumatic experience to get such a gift, how do we access something like that?
I would say that the feelings that I feel now when I see someone in pain or know someone's in pain, and then, you know, when I was in the hospital, the feeling that I have is more of a feeling of service and assurity, living outside yourself. I guess it's human nature to want the best for yourself, for your family, for those close to you. I think that feeling can be obtained by living outside yourself, realizing that the world doesn't evolve around, you know, you and your life, but there are many worlds that are evolving that all eventually end up running into each other, end up circling in harmony. But I would say the best way to obtain that is to do that, is to just live outside yourself and live for others.
What I wanted to do is to kind of frame this and then to make a comment. The experience that you've shared with us tonight really kind of fits into the classic near-death experience in terms of the traumatic event, the separation of the body. I believe probably multiple encounters with people, if you will, beyond the veil. But I think the biggest comment that I want to make, that when people have had an experience such as you've experienced, there becomes a realization that you're not what you see, but you are what you are. And what I mean by that is that oftentimes we get locked up into our ego about what we see, what we can do, and that really isn't the essence of who we are. And that when you have that traumatic event occur and there is so much of what you thought you were taken away from you, you really do come to the realization that your body is just the vehicle that gets who you really are around. And that's when I think the true essence of who all we are comes out, is that when we experience that loss, that we really find out that we still are very much a complete person, and that a lot of those dreams and aspirations that we thought we had really were just kind of fleeting memories, that the journey is now truly beginning. I think that what you've exemplified is that what so many people have shared with our group is that the true gift of life often isn't realized until we come to that point when we may lose it. It's certainly not something that, you know, we want anybody to experience, but by having these meetings, what we really have the ability to do is to take those gifts that other people have experienced and integrate them into our own lives. And for that, I really want to thank you.
If I were in the accident, would I have survived? Did he tell you what the doctors told him, why he survived? Did you tell him?
I didn't.
He said that the doctors told him that he would never have survived except for his size. And so I looked at him and I said, so Ciali, I wouldn't be here. And he said, no, you sure wouldn't.
That's right.
But I'm going to put some people on the spot if you'll hold on. I want to thank Martin. I couldn't be here because I was teaching a class tonight, and so I couldn't be here on time. And Martin was kind enough to agree to introduce Ciali tonight, and I was very grateful to him for that. But I wanted to ask his nurse, if we have the other microphone, if I give you the microphone, would you just tell us a little bit about what you observed? I mean, with that. In Ciali's recovery, that would go along with his story. Just a few words.
Well, the thing that stands out the most is I never have heard Ciali complain. Wow. Never heard Ciali complain. Never saw him feel sorry for himself. Never said anything negative. He befriended the 19-year-old patient. Sweet, thoughtful, caring, always seemed to put other people first and made other people laugh. And he's just an inspiration, just an amazing young man.
And that's why you came, because you wanted to hear that story.
Well, there's no coincidence. I just got on this mailing list like a month ago. And the first speaker was Ciali. And I'm like, oh,
did you
I'm there.
Okay, now my next question is going to be for Mom. I just wanted to know, if you don't mind sharing with us, what have you observed that's changed about Ciali?
I don't think there's much change on him because he's always a positive. He's always positive. And his attitude, I think that's what saved him and helped us, is his attitude. So after the accident, we never had any negative because of him. I can't really explain it, but my strength was drawn from him, where he's supposed to be drawn strength from me. Instead, I was more stronger because of his positive attitude.
All right, Nicole, now I got to tell you, let's see, I've known Nicole since I moved into my neighborhood, and it's been about 16 years ago. So I saw her before she ever turned a teenager. And then I remember when she was getting married and I got an invitation. That guy's a big guy, you know? He will be able to take care of Nicole, right? Anyway, it has been really an honor for me to get to know Ciali as I interviewed and talked to him. But I've got to admit that the day that Nicole walked into church just recently, I never put it two and two together. You talk about there are not coincidences. A year ago, I was teaching a class at BYU on main campus. I had about 48, 45 students. And one day, this young girl comes up to me, and she had talked, and it was a gender theory class. We talk about how hard it is, the differences between the gender attitudes and everything. And she was telling me about growing up with all these brothers and how she had to, there was no sympathy for her. It was all these brothers. And anyway, she walks up to me one day in class, and she says, Sister Cherry, I won't be able to come to class next week or the week after. My brother has been in a severe car accident, and they don't think he's going to live, so I hope you can excuse me. Of course, that was Ciali, and I had no idea that this Ciali was married to my neighbor, Nicole Dunaway. I never put it all together until a couple of months later when his sister came to me, and she said, you know, I think you know my brother's wife. And that was when the first time I realized that this Ciali was married to my neighbor's daughter, Nicole. Coincidence, right? Just a few weeks ago when Ciali got out of rehab and they were going to stay at the Dunaway's home, and they were our neighbors for a few weeks, and Nicole walked in and she talked about that Ciali was home and that they were getting ready to be once again together after almost a year to have a normal life again. My heart just thumped inside of me recalling his sister and recalling what she must have been through in this family for the past year. Then it was my turn to arrange the speaker, and I had someone else arranged, and 2 weeks before they were supposed to come, 2 weeks ago, they emailed me, not even 2 weeks, probably 10 days ago or whatever, and said, I won't be able to make it, and it's really hard to get a speaker on the last minute. I was sitting there, and all of a sudden I went, oh my gosh, Nicole's husband had a near-death experience. I knew it. He had never spoken to me. She had not spoken to me. But I just knew it. I got on the phone and I tried to find someone with Nicole's number. And finally, I emailed her mom and dad on their mission, said, I need Nicole's number. Could you give it to me? And called her. And what I was amazed with was right away I said, did Ciali by any chance have a near-death experience? Yeah. You know, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then I said, do you think he'd be willing to share? And she said, oh, sure. And I called Ciali. He was so, so open. And I was so grateful. And I thought that, first of all, this young couple beginning their marriage, what incredible strength, both spiritual strength and a connection of love, to be able to go through this tremendous tragedy that has resulted in a blessing of growth and spiritual maturity that I don't think most of us even have. And I think that it shows us what character these two young people have. So I'm going to ask Nicole to share with us what it was like to be her for a few minutes on the other end of this experience. So if you don't even have to stand up, Nicole. You can just share. We can all hear you.
I'm Nicole. Ladies, what do you think? He's pretty cute, huh? Yeah. I think I'll keep him. It wasn't my choice for a while, but now that I can choose, I think I'll keep him. Being on my side of the spectrum, I told Ciali that he'd have to give me a heads up if I'd have to say anything. So now I have to say something. Honestly, I'm trying to think of what has always helped me. You know, you just kind of take one hard day at a time. And I didn't think I was going to cry. For those going through an experience like this, the gentleman asked how would you be able to prepare yourself for something like this without actually going through the experience. And in a lot of ways, you can't. That I've had family members that have, through various reasons, and friends that have been in the hospital for a number of reasons. And until you... sleep on a hospital floor until you literally go months without sleeping, that you learn a different sort of appreciation. But kind of as Cielo has said, you learn to be open with people in a different way. You learn to connect with people on a different level. And each person is such a unique, or has such a unique spirit. And you're each here for different reasons. And whatever your reason is, I hope that you each find it, and that you, whatever it is, that you share it, that you don't hold it in, as kind of as Yali was talking about, that that you're open with whatever you've learned, whatever experience that you're going through, that you'll take it and you'll go with it, that you don't let it hold you back, that you don't stop progressing in this life, because there's so much to this life and you don't want to take it for granted. And so I'll just ask each of you, do me a favor, and just you just kind of go one hard day at a time, but I promise it does get easier. So
I know that scientists and doctors tend to be skeptical about experiences like yours. Did you tell any of your doctors about it? And if you did, what was their reaction to it?
The doctors that were directly involved with me for the first 2 months, I actually have not been in contact with them. I do see a doctor now who knows my story, and he's always in disbelief. He doesn't believe just seeing me walk into his office. It's just unfathomable to him.
I think those of us who are able to believe in religious and spiritual truth should be glad that it's simply in us to believe, because some people simply lack the ability within to believe, and we should be thankful that it's in us to believe.
That's beautiful. We won't keep you anymore. I just got to thank you for coming. And I must say, you know what is amazing to me is that this sweet nurse is sitting here, which to me is a testament to the fact that people in the field of medicine are aware and awakening to the experiences that their patients go through that they no longer can deny are very real. And has changed the hearts of many people in medicine, and I bet you'll agree with that they are so much more open to this possibility. Cielo, thank you so much.